On this week's Our Beer Could Be Your Life, Joe and Matt get to sit down and talk to Shane McConnell of Modern Draft and have a couple beers to discuss the difference between stoner and doom metal, just how disgusting draft lines can be, and the re-emergence of British Milds.
So you're Shane from the Dregs Records in Modern Draft. That's how we know you. And we want to talk to you about how we know you today and what you're up to and connect with you over over a beer.
Sounds great.
Let's do that. We were reminiscing about how we each met you. And I actually did not tell Oz the story of meeting you. I met you, I think, at Mystic Brewery, RIP, in Chelsea, Massachusetts.
Yeah, no, that's... That's where we met. This bartending, tending some bar.
Was that you landing from the West Coast? Like,
Pretty close. I came here, and then I got a job at Alden and Harlow. Probably like the first week I lived here, and I was like, "Oh, like I used to be a bar manager and stuff." They're like, "Yeah, you're qualified to be a bar back here." And I was like, sounds great. I'm going to be a bar back then because I need a job. And the cocktail world was not fit for me. And landed at Mystic probably within 2 months of moving to Boston.
That's awesome, man. Those are two institutions you found yourself at pretty quickly.
Yeah.
Was that early in the Mystic days when it was just all farmhouse stuff?
So during my interview, they were like, "Okay, so what do you think we're known for?" And I was like, "Oh, fermentation. Like, that's what you're known for, is fermentation." And they're like, "Cool, we want to hire you. We've never made an IPA and we never will." And I was like, "All right, cool." 2 weeks later, Orange Dinosaur came out and we had a line out the door, and they never looked back.
So you're telling me that they told you that on that day, and then they made the IPA that afternoon to ferment.
Yeah, basically. Yeah. It was something like that. It was like literally within the first month, you know, because I was still just part-time there when that came out.
Yeah, and that was the double IPA named after the Orange Dinosaur remains on Route 1 last time I was up that way, but... I think that was their first foray into, was it like Belgian yeast in double IPA? It was strong, but I don't remember if it was.
Yeah, it was like 8%. I think all the people who make the best New England IPAs all also make phenomenal saison. And I think it is like the whole fermentation thing. You know, when you focus on cellar side, you know, I feel like that kind of translates, you know, a little bit better into like the New England style versus, you know, people who really are like hot side and recipe focused.
Yeah, that's an interesting point.
Lends itself to other stuff.
Just like, you know, understanding warm fermentations and you know, what now with like the Kvake world too, people are like pushing that stuff like saison yeast and coming up with some pretty cool beers. Speaking of beer, we're going to drink one of your favorites, I think, I hope, and Tannenzapfle.
I would hope. I got it tattooed on my leg.
Let's hope it's still good then.
Yeah.
You actually pioneered a roadhouse themed bike ride, I think because I was there.
Yeah.
The hordes of people alongside you chasing this beer across Boston.
Yeah, we hit up Mike Verga and was just like, "Hey, give me every account that sells Rothaus and we're going to try to hit it all in one day." And yeah, that was a fun ride. I think it was like 17 miles, like start to finish.
I'm thinking about it now. Two of the bars are no more, at least. The two that I remember most of that day were Deep Ellum and People's Republic. And both are relics of the past.
Hopefully that's not like a thing that keeps trending.
Places that are Rot House are all the only ones that are going down.
Yeah, I certainly hope not. But you know, when we Oz and I started kind of talking about what this podcast is about, it was like, you know, the I guess the corners of our the craft beer industry where you find the weirdos that make craft beer and are involved in some capacity in craft beer are also musical weirdos in a lot of times. And we being people that consider ourselves weirdos. I mean, I don't want to speak for you, Oz, but you know,
I'll take it.
I'll speak for you, Joe. You're fucking weird.
Yeah. Right. Sure. Thank you. I appreciate that. You know, we wanted to talk to other people who are also in the same position, who are like creatives, both in beer and otherwise. So you came to mind. So obviously we talked about your origins in Boston, but you want to talk a bit about like, you have a very unique perspective on craft beer, I think.
Yeah. So for people who are not familiar with me, which is almost everyone on this planet, I am I'm the first employee of Modern Draft. And as of last year, I am the first, I guess, after the fact partner of the company. And so what we do is we maintain draft systems as well as install systems. And we've kind of gotten ourselves into a niche of working with breweries or specifically breweries. And especially breweries that like doing like kind of wacky stuff or propose very interesting kind of requests, like multi-temp draft systems and stuff like that. Or, hey, you know, we got a wacky idea of pouring beer straight out of a barrel. Or
who would be dumb enough to do that?
I don't know. A few people. You know, we like the challenge. We like the zaniness and the, you know, hey, let's pour beer at 54 degrees. Yeah, that sounds super smart. You know, from a physics standpoint, it's a lot harder than pouring cold beer. So, it's just like really fun to kind of get the opportunities to have people be like, hey, can you do this? And we say yes, even though we don't know if we can. And then we figure out how to do it. But yeah, that's like the install side of Modern Draft. That's mostly what I partake in these days.
Was there anybody that like you just could not fill a request? It was just too over the top or too ill-advised?
Like some of the like wacky like flavored beers with like extracts and stuff, that always is, you know, concerning. So we always try to stray people away from that. But for beers, it's hasn't gotten too crazy. It's more so with like cocktails or, you know, wine stuff, you know, like everyone wants, because the profits are great for kegs versus bottle. So with wine, you know, there's been a small push to get it on that format. And so people are like, oh, you know, we want a red and we want a white. And you're just like, you do not want red wine on the draft system. How you think it's just easy. You open the faucet, it comes out. And it's like, yeah, it comes out at freaking 38 degrees. Like no one wants to drink red wine at 38 degrees. So we like advise people to not do that kind of stuff. We had like a little fun experiment that we were doing in the office where we were were just nitrogenating different liquids just to see how it would be like. So we did like iced tea, lemonade. My favorite was Gatorade. We did like the cool blue, like nitro, cold brew or cool blue, the blue, whatever blue flavor is. I don't know what it's called. It's just blue.
Yeah, blue flavor. Classic Gatorade blue flavor.
Yeah, just the blue Gatorade. We nitrogenated it and it tasted like fucking cotton candy.
Amazing.
It was, yeah, it was super cool. We did chocolate milk. That was kind of weird. But
yeah, like that makes like me.
Stout. No, it wasn't like a stout. It was not good. Yeah, because something that like a lot of people don't think about is the gas, when it emulsifies the liquid, it actually partakes, like it puts in flavor. So like if you have something that's really acidic, you can't carbonate it. So like coffee, you don't see carbonated coffee because the acidity of the coffee, when it interacts with the CO2, it becomes unbearably bitter. But yeah, so nitrogen does the same thing, where you get the creamy mouthfeel, and some people put like a creamy flavor to it as well. It's, yeah, the gas has its own little.
I have a feeling that most people don't understand what's happening in draft systems at all. Like, never mind, you know, wine, cocktails, and everything else. People see like a handle and a, you know, that you pull and then beer comes out of it. But there's like an amazing world of variety back there, and it's cool to see what you guys have done, because like until you guys were doing this in Boston, I don't know who else was specializing in the type of work you're talking about. If anyone was, people were maybe occasionally cleaning draft lines, hopefully.
I mean, they're cleaning them, air quotes, because podcast. It's been pretty funny to so we've never lost an account due to lack of satisfaction, but we've had people be like, hey man, it's a little expensive for me. I want to go back to my old company, but we'll have you come like quarterly, or you know, or we'll go back to them, we'll see how it is. If it's really that bad, then we'll come back. And we always are like, sweet. And when you decide that they're no longer good enough, have us come the day after they're clean, just so we can show you. So they're going to clean it, and then tomorrow we're going to clean it right after them and show you what they're not getting. And it's always funny when it's sometimes it's really bad, or like when we have a first account, they're like, oh yeah, you know, because of scheduling, they accidentally came yesterday. And you're just like, take a look at that motherfucker, because they did not come yesterday. I can tell you that.
I mean, I think that you need to append a content warning to it, but you guys have a hashtag that's worth searching.
The Sunday Funk Days. Because of COVID, we haven't been getting like too many new accounts. Because that's the thing, is Sunday Funk Day only exists when we're getting new accounts, because after we've taken on the account, it doesn't get like that anymore. So we're shooting ourselves in the foot for content, but you know, providing a good service. So right now Sunday Funk Day has been kind of lacking. I did just move all the photos from my phone and my computer onto an external hard drive, and I have it all sorted, and we might just start pulling some from the catalog, because there's some really gnarly shit in there.
Yeah, and I should explain, that's the stuff that you find in draft lines when you first encounter them. So the stuff that's like, you know, people want to wash their hands before they like handle food, this is the stuff that's touching stuff that goes into your body before it goes into your body. Hence the content warning.
It's pretty disgusting. We look kind of think of it as like, imagine doing like a pour over for your coffee, but instead for your beer, and instead of a filter, you're using a SCOBY, and you just pour in your beer through a SCOBY into the glass. And that's what it's like to drink beer off of the dirty line.
Are you at a point where you can grab a draft beer at a place, sight unseen, and just know?
You can smell it before, like when you walk in, like dirty beer lines have like a smell to it. And so, yeah, it's to the point where like you can, like, because we clean bars all the time, right? That's the job, is we go, we, you know, administer the chemical, we break all the parts down, we scrub them, do all that fun stuff. But yeah, after, like, I know what caustic smells like, you know, that's a very specific smell. And because we used to hand bottle all of our caustic at Jack's Abbey, like, I used to have my face, like, with protective gear and stuff, but when you're pouring caustic from a container to another container, it kind of aerates a little bit, and, you know, so you fucking breathing that stuff in, and it's not ideal, but when you're a young company and you want sweet pricing on barrels of caustic instead of, you know, 32 ounce bottles, but we need the 32 ounce bottles to take to work, you just fucking pouring that shit in there.
Caustic fume facial sounds just so delightful.
It sounds like a band that ought to be on a record label of some kind.
Yeah, caustic.
Well, caustic fumes facial, specifically that.
Mm. Oh yeah,
that's pretty good.
So that's, yeah, I the other sure. reason that we're talking to you, Shane, is that you're starting a record label, and you signed your first band, Bog Wizard. But I'm really curious, going back to your Mystic days, is there a type of record that you're never going to put out that we can expect to see later next year, maybe? You're starting a stoner and doom metal record label. So what is the one type of record that we will never see from this label?
From this label? There's a ton of records that you won't see from this label, whether I like it or not. Yeah, I mean, the label kind of focuses on all things heavy, slow, you know, that's clean, dirty, you know, but more of the, yeah, kind of doomy stuff. So if it's kind of poppy, you know, probably not gonna get on there. Yeah, just most stuff that's on the radio, probably not gonna be kind of seeing, whether it's because my label's big enough or because I just don't care for that music.
So you're saying that you're breaking the news here that Taylor Swift's re-recordings of her original albums will not be coming out on the Dregs records?
No, I refuse. Her people reached out to me and I said, I do not want you running my good name through the gutter. That was that.
That's very brave of you. I appreciate that. That's, you know, just you get a strikeout on your own.
I'm not.
What was the genesis of deciding to start a label for you? Like, where does this come from?
So I've always liked music, and now I look back and I'm like, man, you didn't like music. You listened to music and you thought you liked music. Like, now I'm like addicted to music, and like addicted to like finding music and just kind of consuming it as much as possible. And part of that is going to shows. You know, it'd always be cool to be in a band, but I'm just not musically inclined to like that. Also, if I'm not immediately good at something, I don't typically stick with it, which is a huge flaw, and not very good if you want to learn a musical instrument. But yeah, I was at, I went to a show, I think it's called Pink Noise Studios. It's like a record studio, like a recording studio, but they were doing like a little show, and there's Death Pesos was one of the bands that was playing there. They're kind of like stoner rock, so yeah, a lot more fun, kind of upbeat, but still a lot of good riffs, good pacing. But one of the bands that was supposed to open for Death Pesos, but they ended up flipping the bill, and she ended up closing, was a band called Mother Mammoth. So two-piece, just the biggest fucking sound I've ever heard, and coming out of like a little tiny room, yeah, it was nuts. And for me, vocals was always a very huge part of music, and if there wasn't lyrics or singing or something like that, it was really hard for me to keep up and like keep my attention on it, which is funny because with a lot of stoner metal and stuff like that, you'll go 10 minutes without any lyrics,
or like still without have a chord like 40 change.
Minutes of a song. Yeah. Yeah. They've played two notes. But yeah, Mother Mammoth, no vocals. And the whole entire time I was just super enthralled with the music. And I was like, this is fucking amazing. I looked them up. They had like a few songs on Bandcamp, and I was like, I need to start a record label. Like, that's what, like, I absolutely love music, and I need, like, this is the thing that brings me into music that I can do, but not have to be musically talented. And so that kind of kicked the ball and got it started rolling. And then, you know, I've been thinking about it, and I started this Instagram page for, I called it LPs and LPs. So it's lagers, pilsners, and LPs. And so it was literally just a page where I'd take pictures of lagers and records. And I started doing that. And with that, you know, bands start following you, and, you know, you start having conversations, you know, because, like, you know, you're sharing people's music. It's, you know, free advertisement for them. They love it, you know. Gets a, you know, conversation going. And then I start, all right, well, this whole world just kind of opens up. Now I'm starting to look through for bands in unconventional ways. You know, now I can use Instagram to find music, which I never thought would be a thing. And yeah, found a band called Bog Wizard, and listened to their album. I was like, wow, this is really good, but it's not on vinyl. And so I reached out to them. I was like, hey, are you guys ever planning on putting this on vinyl? You know, I'd love to have it. And they're like, oh, you know, it's probably not going to happen, but, you know, possibly. It's like, okay, cool. Well, if that was something that you were interested in, let me know. I'd love to, you know, kind of be your sugar daddy on, you know, putting this record out. And, they're like, oh shit, okay, like, yeah, we'll think about it. And I was like, all right, cool. And I was like, man, I can't start a record label. Like, I don't know anything about record labels or any of that shit. I don't know about anything about the music industry, on like how the industry works. And I think like a day or two after, Chris from Bridge Nine was doing an AMA, and I asked him, was like, hey, what's the thing that you wish you knew, you know, before you started the record label? Or like, what's the best advice you could give to someone who wants to start one? And it was just like, start today, start right now, start the record label right now. And it was funny because he was doing like, it was like an Instagram one. So he was, for most of the questions, he was just doing like text back with a picture or whatever. But with mine, he actually did a video that was like 6 or 7 like little ticks long, and he's just going, just like, you just got to do it right now, do it with whatever you got, like, don't wait until you have X amount of money, because, you know, that's just pushing away. You know, Bridge Nine got started by little kids selling stickers outside of Fenway. You know, if as an adult you can't do better than someone who's just selling stickers to put out their friends' records, you know,
you should say, like you should kind of illegally to... selling t-shirts and stickers outside of Fenway too. There was kind of a definite punk rock background to what those guys were doing. I think Start Today sounds like a record that came out on Bridge Nine Records too. Like, I don't know, maybe it is, but like that's that kind of positivity I would expect from those dudes. Like that's a good connection.
Yeah. And so I was like, all right, cool. Well, if they say yes, I'm starting a fucking record label. And, sure as hell, they said that they wanted to work with me on a project, and I was like, awesome, that's, you know, fantastic, I'll start learning. And so it's been 2 months, got an LLC,
Whoa.
Come at me. Oh, wait, you can't because I got an LLC.
I do like
that business joke.
Well, we can't come at you. We don't have an LLC or any way to make any money from any of this. We've just kind of conned our day job that this is something that would help sell beer. So, you know,
I also,
drink beer.
I also just hope you succeed. So, you know, I don't want to come at you.
I appreciate it. So it's funny because I don't know anything about record labels or how to run one or what they do exactly. Or so it's been learning this whole entire process. And sorry. It went down the windpipe. This is great.
Yeah, we'll just do one of these. This is the edit point for Dennis, our editor. We're editing this. What are you drinking?
We're just gonna leave it in for now.
What am I drinking?
Yeah. We should probably get to that. I should have asked you when I said what you were drinking.
No worries. All right.
So
finish my thought though.
Do it. Start it again though.
All right. So with not knowing anything about record labels or how they work or any of that fun stuff, that means I didn't make the rules because I don't know the rules. You know, I get to do whatever the fuck I want because I have the privilege of this not being my day job. This gets to be a hobby, and this gets to be a cool hobby that I get to like really make it whatever, you know, as much as I put into it, that's what it becomes. And so with that, it's kind of neat because I can offer bands stuff that other labels might not offer, which like Jesus Christ. The thing that has been kind of cool is I'm doing like the deal that I give to all the bands that I propose to is a 60-40 split where the band makes 60% of the profits and I only make 40. Which for a band that's just starting up, that's huge. Because the biggest thing is, you know, like the bands don't have money. So if they have some capital, they can really do some cool shit. And because I don't need this record label to pay my bills, you know, I can offer them more money, which also like, I don't really know what I'm doing 100%, you know, it's all learning on, you know, as I'm going. And so that's kind of also a thing where, hey, you're going with a smaller guy who doesn't have the connections. You know, I started a label during COVID. I can't go to a bar and meet people. You know, I can't go to shows and network, you know. Freaking Instagram has been everything for the company, like literally just messaging people on Instagram, you know, and building connections there, which has been great. Have connections now all over the world because of it, you know, that I wouldn't get on the bar. But
I feel like there's an interesting parallel though from, you know, you talked about not being musically inclined but loving music and, you know, wanting to, well, I guess what I'm hearing is you saying wanting to be a part of it. And, you know, when people think of what they love about musicians or what they think about music, they think about musicians and the people performing them, but like record labels are what are delivering the music to people. And, you know, in your day job, you know, people talk about brewers and obsess over like where this guy worked back in the day, but like, you know, you guys are performing this kind of like integral thing that like touches everybody who touches beer and draft beer in like a Boston bar. And like, you know, it's kind of behind the scenes, but also kind of like right on the cusp for people in the know. So I think it's an interesting parallel.
Yeah. I never thought about that where it's like one person removed from both situations.
Yeah. But the man behind the man.
Yeah, it's like when I used to like homebrew before I worked for Jack's Abbey. At that point, I stopped homebrewing because like this beer is so much better than what I'm making in my closet. Like it's the same idea. Like these guys are just making better music than I can imagine. I just want to release it now. Now I'm just trying to sell it. You know, it's that same idea.
Yeah. No, it's been pretty cool, and it's like also been like so. So I signed I signed Bog Wizard. Also another thing that I provide that some bands probably think is pretty cool, labels probably think it's a little silly, is I don't actually sign the band. So like Bog Wizard isn't under my record label. So I'm releasing vinyl with them on my record label. So it's a partnership where I don't do multi-product contracts or anything like that. You know, you want to release a record with me, you're contractually bound to help me sell records. But even then, they can go to another label immediately, you know, like while we're doing our release, they can get signed by another label and work with that other label. I don't care. I'm not trying to stop anyone from doing anything. I want the band to succeed. And if I can be a stepping stone to that success, you know, for me, that's, you know, amazing. I'd love for, you know, Bog Wizard to get, you know, signed to Electric Valley or, you know, whoever they want. That'd be the coolest if I was able to kind of be that stepping stone. So that's like another neat thing that I, you know, kind of doing with the labels. No strings attached, you know, we work on a product, but you're not mine. I don't own you. Like, you keep your music rights. I don't want to own your music. I want you to own your music. You need to be able to make your money however you want, whenever you want, you know?
Yeah, you wanna help musicians be able to get a record out there when they might not. Probably partially because you want a copy of that record yourself and you want to share it with everybody that you share that vision with.
Yeah, I was thinking in the beginning when you reach out to these bands, you're like, I want to buy vinyl from you. I'm like, but I don't want one. I want to buy 1,000 and sell them with you. Quite the pitch.
Yeah, no, it's been pretty cool. And like, so we announced Bog Wizard in January, and then it's pretty neat. I got approached by a band called Drug Sauna, and which is a band that I really like. I already had their picture disc when they hit me up via Instagram, because that's how it's all done now. And and yeah, it was like pretty wild because they're not like a big band or anything like that, but they definitely have a little following behind them. And I was like, that was my most anticipated record of 2020 was 2% Sonic. And that was like the thing. I was like, oh, I just can't wait till this comes out. I don't even know what it all sounds like. And I'm just like, I just want it because I fucking think these dudes are cool. Like they're really neat people. They only play in a van. Like all live performances are literally, they pull up in a boogie van, they flip the top open, and yeah, they just play in the van. The album was recorded in a van. So they just like ass to ass two vans right outside the music studio, ran the cables from the studio out into the front yard and recorded the album in the van. So was just like, oh, that's cool.
So the van is in the band in a sense, like
it's a key member
living the gimmick right there.
Yeah, no, it's definitely one hell of a gimmick.
But, where are they from?
They're from Calgary up in Canada.
All right. So, I mean, they have a whole continent they can explore with this van without having to get into like, you know, flying the van elsewhere. So they got ways to go. That's exciting. And you're releasing a tape from them, right? Or a tape cassette of the record?
Yeah, we got a cassette on pre-order right now. It's also got a limited doom in air quotes doom edit of one of their songs, so not getting into that too much yet. It's a little bit of a secret as of right now, but it's essentially one of the songs from the record, but they just gave it a new edit. I would say remaster, but it's not a master in that kind of way. It's master in a way funner kind of way.
What makes it doom as opposed to whatever else it would be considered.
So Drugsauna is kind of like, they kind of float in between like stoner rock and stoner metal. And so the doom edit is essentially slowed down. So the idea came from, so you have like two speeds on your record player. And so the idea is like, oh, wait, it came from, what if we just slow it down by using the alternate speed on the record player and see what that's like. And so it's not quite, you know, it's not 33 and a third and then it jumps over to 45. Like it's a whole different edit on the track. But that was kind of the idea, is because doom is more slowed down, heavier, kind of darker vibe, whereas stoner metal and stuff like that is a little bit uplifting.
It's actually a question that we had written down for you, because like I feel like I'm versed in the language of heavy music, and I love a lot of heavy music, but you know, if you turn your head in the heavy music world, you find like a little community of people who've built up genres and subgenres where I'm like, I like things in this genre, but I don't know the difference between stoner and doom. And you just had a sub delineation of stoner rock, stoner metal, and then doom. So it's actually fracturing before my eyes here, which is fantastic.
Well, so check this shit out. So the label, I say, deal all things stoner, doom, and sludge. So there's stoner rock, stoner metal, there's stoner doom, there's sludge, there's sludge doom, there's sludge metal. So they all kind of do this crazy intersection. And I'm no king of genres or anything like that. I just say it, I listen to doom or stoner metal, kind of depending on who the person I'm talking to, what I think they'll understand what I'm saying more. But yeah, so like stoner rock versus stoner metal. So like think of like Fu Manchu, stoner rock, you know, stoner metal, that's Sleep, you know. Those are two very different bands, but they're in the stoner subgenre. Whereas like doom classic would be Black Sabbath, you know. But then you also have like doom in the sense of like a band like Monolord, which Monolord and Black Sabbath could not be more different, you know, even though they have some of the similar ties. You know, someone who listens to Black Sabbath isn't going to, no matter what, like Monolord, but the reverse is probably true. You know, it's kind of funny. I don't know, it's weird. Genres are silly. I don't really understand.
It's like, it's reminding me of the world of like English pale ale. If you want to like get geeky with English pale ale, you know, you've got milds and I don't know, like standard, ordinary, special.
I was thinking something similar with like that brewery that just did an India lager, but they decided to call it a cold IPA, and they're like, it's brewed with lager yeast and Pilsner malt. Really, that's not, the cold IPA is not a thing. You can't just keep deviating. At some point, there has to be a line in the sand.
No, English is a wonderful language where definitions are built based off of how words are used, not by what they mean.
Well, you know, language in general is all made up, so you might as well just keep going.
This whole thing is bullshit. Yeah. This is a hologram. You guys didn't know that?
Yeah, life, all of it, so silly.
So one thing I know that we're going to put in the show notes is you shared a mix recently, the Dregs Records mix. Does that include Bog Wizard and Drugsauna?
The secret about making playlists is, because you can't just make a playlist with only the music that you work with.
Sure.
It'd be pretty silly. So what you do is you sneak those tracks in, you know, just like one or two, and then make the rest of the playlist about other people. They get psyched about it. They post it out. It's like a huge networking thing. I think the most followers I got in one day was, well, not the most, but probably like top five, was the day I shared that playlist. Because yeah, it just becomes this whole thing to tag all the bands in it, and they share it with all their friends and stuff like that, and it becomes like this really awesome networking where I've even had bands on the playlist be like, holy shit, this is a great playlist, like I don't know most of these bands, because like I was trying to go for only bands that had less than 1,000 monthly listens on Spotify, so that way it was, you know, more underground, more, you know, a lot of stuff that not a lot of people are really paying attention to that I'm super stoked on. But yeah, that playlist features a song from Bog Wizard and Drug Sauna on there. It's a fantastic playlist. I didn't realize how fun making playlists was until I made it.
Oh, that's like,
because I even like organized it to like, it's meant to be played top to bottom, but I mean, all of it kind of vibes well enough where you don't have to. But yeah, it's kind of fun, kind of go through Spotify, find all the bands that I really like. All right, cool. What are their listen counts? All right, get those guys out. You know, they have a following, they don't need my help. You know, I'm not helping them, you know, with my brand new record label with a minimal following, you know, but yeah, kind of pairing up songs right next to each other. That way, you know, one band that's, they have a band above them and below them that's similar. So when they see their song on the playlist, maybe they look at these other bands because it's in the same, you know, sector. So it's been kind of cool to see kind of like the whole, you know, network kind of working together.
Yeah, there's like, it sounds like you're using the internet to create some of the community that we're missing out on in these times. That is actually kind of what Oz and I are doing here too. We want to talk to people who are interested in music and beer, because I mean, I was going to ask you, and I'll put it right here, like, where would you rather be than talking to us schmucks on the internet? You'd rather be the show tonight, so like, build your show, and I'll share mine.
Yeah, no, definitely. Yeah.
What's the show you're at right now? What's on tap? And who's playing?
So like, what show am I at? I get to pick whatever band I
get. Yeah, I mean, this is just total,
this is fantasy.
All right,
you can't do anything. This is definitely fantasy.
Yeah, this is all definitely not happening. I don't know, because I feel like it's almost a loaded question where there's like certain bands you have to say, and then there's the bands that you actually want to say. I would say the band that I want to see the most right now is a band called Mephistopheles. Yeah, they're killer fucking band, based out of Argentina. A lot of music I listen to right now is from South America, which has kind of been pretty fun.
Is there a lot of heavy music coming out of there?
Yeah, I don't know what happened, but within the last like 3 or 4 years, like the doom style, like more doom than stoner metal and stuff like that, has just been blowing up in South America. So like, I don't know if like Ozzy did a tour over there like 20, 30 years ago, and then this is the prodigy of, you know, him being on tour, but yeah, it's like insane how many killer bands are in South America right now that are just like just starting, like have one or two records out.
You know, when people say like, I kind of get frustrated sometimes, people talk about the beer scene in New York versus Boston or something, they're like, yeah, this scene is like X years behind this scene, you know, whatever they want to. Mm-hmm. I think there's something about with music where it's like, you can have different generations be into different stuff at different times, but they're like filtering it through their experience and lives. And so it comes out different. You can't, you know, I used to joke that like ska is alive in Western Mass because there's like all these ska bands we used to play with back in the day. They were all in like the I-91 corridor for whatever reason. People here still love ska.
I mean, someone's got it.
I mean, I'm there for ska, and I was going to make a joke about Mephiscopheles because there was a ska band called Mephiscopheles back in the day.
There's also a Belgian quad from, I think, Avery named that as well. If we're going to bring it into the beer world.
Yeah, no.
Yeah, see the connections, man. I love listening to weirdo radio stations from places that I don't live. There's this fun tool out there right now. I just saw shared this week, which is like a little like Google Earth, you know,
3D radio station in the world about.
With little dots for the radio stations around the world. So I've been obsessing over like Irish alternative, like punk and post-punk for like 3 years now, which is, I don't know anybody else that like loves it as much as I do. So I just listen to the Irish radio station now.
Does this also have the like the time period function as well?
Oh, I haven't, maybe. I don't know. Is that like
so going... you need to link up with Chris, because he has this program that he's like in love with where it's a world map and you can click any country in the entire world, put in a time period, and it will play you music from that time period in that part of the world.
Oh, fantastic. This is different than what I'm talking about. Yeah. This is great. That
is insane. Okay.
Yeah, no, it's pretty fucking neat. Because, yeah, we'll just be like, I don't know. Let's do Russia in the 20s. Why not? Let's see what they were doing. What were they listening to?
And I mean, they were waltzing the whole time, right? I mean, that's all Russia did in the 20s.
Well, the only cool Russian story I know is the Bone Records. Do you guys know that story about the Western music imported by being printed on x-rays? So they like took like discarded x-ray sheets and then like cut them in a vinyl lathe with Western music that was otherwise illegal, so that you can buy these like flimsy, they look like flexi discs you'd get in like a magazine, but they're x-rays of someone's pelvis with Elvis like singles imprinted on them that you can still play. It was pretty cool.
That's amazing.
But that's like the 50s and 60s in Russia, I think. So Ron, I mean, I don't know.
Shane, that sounds like you have an idea right there.
So I'm cursed with the plague of quality, where modern draft is kind of drilled into my head as much as possible that if you're going to do something, it's going to be the best damn thing that you can do. And I don't know if x-ray records hold up. I'd be curious to find out what the longevity of those things are.
Yeah, I mean, in that realm, I think we all have to admit that, you know, I love vinyl and have a large collection. And anytime I get too high on it, I'm like, remember, CDs are higher quality, just less fun.
I don't know, man. I'm like, I'm in the boat of if I'm smoking it at all, records are, especially with the music that I listen to, it's so warm and fuzzy.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, I don't know, it's just like a body experience that I feel like you're being... Yeah, your whole body's just being all fucking wiped up with fuzzy delight. And yeah, the record recording and like the imperfections and the fuzz and the pops and that yeah, to me, like when you're, you know, a little up there, it's so fucking delightful.
Hearing the dust from like the 70s, you know, the records from the 70s that I still have, like that's the best part of a record. That like random pop in the middle of a song from a big dust bunny that, you know, a record I stole from my dad that he hasn't listened to in 20 years.
It makes everything jazz, you know, just random little, you know.
I find it like kind of also meditative on our current world that like when you put a record on, you put a side on, like you're committed to listening to that side. You're not going to skip around other songs, you're not going to, you know, go check this out. And like you can have those connections, but you have to have them offline. You have to just like experience it. And you talked about your playlist being, you know, sequenced, and like that's an album. An album is sequenced. You know, you put things in place for a reason, and you listen to them that way for a reason. So if I make a playlist for someone and I don't want them to shuffle, I have to be like, listen, this is for you. But I thought about this. Don't you be shuffling on me.
Yeah. Nothing worse than a shuffler.
This is a totally unrelated tangent, but AC/DC's Back in Black, the vinyl, is in a different order than the CD that they released later. And I'm like, why? What this? It, they changed the order for the CD. I'm like, the Back in Black is your best record commercially. Why are you changing the order of this? It infuriates me.
Fun fact, the placement of songs on records is actually part of the art form of like making records, because so as you're making the record, the audio has different size grooves, right? So I don't know what it is, if it's more noise, it's open more, or if it's closed more, whatever. I'm not the scientist of this, but I do know that certain pacing songs and certain like complexities and songs need to be positioned tighter into the record, just because it's a physical media. So if it's really flimsy on the end but you're thick in the middle, it will warp, whereas if you have your kind of your beefier material wise, the vinyl on the outside, and it kind of gets thinner on the inside, it's actually structurally more sound. So it actually make the record last longer and not get the waves.
That is,
I don't know if that's why AC/DC did it, but
no, AC/DC did it because they're trash. Okay. I'm here to speak ill to AC/DC at all times. I don't get it. I'd like to get it. It's just not there for me.
That makes me sad.
Well, I mean, I want it to be there for me too. Like I said,
you don't have to love everything. So it's fine.
For sure.
No,
I totally agree with that.
What's
right, so you're the questions.
The question.
What's on tap?
Yeah.
I only answered the first one. Okay. So Mephistopheles is
opening,
jamming out. I prefer Cask at my venue if it's available.
Oh yeah, nice warm beer in a warm club. All right.
Yeah. Listen, I don't claim to be proper about anything. I just want Cask beer wherever the fuck I am, and if it could be a dark mild, I don't even care who makes it. If I'm going to be picky by saying I get Cask, I will relinquish my pickiness with what the actual beer is. As long as it's dark mild, I don't care.
Process over style. That's you. This is the process you like. You want re-fermenting the container.
Drinking dark mild right now, baby.
Ooh.
Yeah. A little small change. The future is unwritten. This was literally released, I think like yesterday. And I hit him up and I was like, I'm going to be on a beer podcast. I need to be drinking your beer. Where can I buy this? So I drove over there today, picked it up.
And I think that's a Joe Strummer quote.
I don't even know who Joe Strummer is.
Oh, no. Well, we'll have in a second, part two.
We can't get into that right now.
You don't have enough time.
I'm the worst with names. I'm the absolute worst with names. So people that I actually know a lot about, I probably don't even know their name.
Well, I'm Joe, but I'm not Joe Strummer. Joe Strummer was the lead singer of The Clash. And mural in New York, the future is unwritten. So,
gotcha.
All right. What are you drinking, Jane?
I am drinking small change. The future is unwritten. Dark mild. So good.
Is small change, they're out of Somerville, I think.
I mean, they're out of Massachusetts because they don't have a physical location.
Got you.
But they do live in Somerville, and they are lovely people. Mike from Small Change is the man.
It's nice to see people making that style, and more people should make it. I don't think we've made one really. We've accidentally made brown ales that haven't had enough attenuation, which is basically making a dark mild, but not intentionally.
So people who say dark mild doesn't sell don't know how to sell beer. And that's my hard opinion that I've come up with in the recent months, because 2020 saw a huge resurge in Dark Mild. We're talking all kinds of big players making Dark Mild all over the United States. I know this because I have an awesome network of friends who, whenever they see Dark Mild, they send me the post, if not the beer. And so I think I had like 10 to 15 different Dark Milds last year, which is pretty spectacular. I feel like that's an accomplishment that not a lot of people in America get to say.
It was one of them in a bag?
Two of them.
Two of them were in a bag.
Yeah, there's a brewery in Seattle. I'm spacing on the name because I'm super great with names. But they do almost all English beer. And it's a big thing for them to do casks at the brewery. But with COVID, obviously, cask completely died. But they found these, like, you know, Franzia style bag and box. And they just started putting all their cask conditioned beer in these bag and boxes. And yeah, so I had one from them. And then I had another one from Forest in Maine, just outside of Philly. And yeah, those guys make excellent English beer. It's insane. And they make a ton of English beer. They have multiple different kinds of dark mild and they sell it. That's the thing is, oh, you know, it's mild May and June and July and August. It's a stupid joke. It's like, sorry, it's not the beer's problem. It's your problem. You don't know how to sell the beer. Like, because other people are selling it. You know, people, they're selling it and they're selling it out. You know, sure, it's not, you know, day one, all the cans get ripped off the shelf and that's it. And you're out of dark mild. Yeah, it's a little unrealistic, but the beer does sell. It's fantastic in every way. It's, yeah, best beer style.
This is the kind of spicy take that we need, that we can tease, that we got people to, like, what beer style you need to pay attention to. So that's good. We got that.
Yeah. If we've taken anything from talking to you, Shane, it's that British dark milds are making a comeback and they're going to supplant hazy IPAs next year.
I mean, the future 100%. Is unwritten. That's what we're
100%. I keep going to show the can because I'm thinking that this is a visual thing, but it's not.
We can hear it. I mean, we can see each other. that was a double thank you. Oh, wait.
All right, so we got the band. All right, so we got the band. We got what's on tap.
Yeah.
What was the third question?
Well, it was where it was. Now you are wearing an O'Brien's Pub T-shirt for the audio.
Dude, that would be insane for them to be at O'Brien's because that is a tiny little space.
And for cask beer to be available at O'Brien's, that would also be a cool.
The beer is almost already warm enough, you know. but I mean, yeah, it'd be super tight to see them at O'Brien's. I'd prefer to see them either at RIP Great Scott. That was a low hanging fruit that I just snatched. But Middle East Down, I always see insane shows at Middle East Down. And I feel like I want the body count for Mephistopheles, you know, because I want to be in the crowd and I want there to be a lot of people. I don't want there to be 100 people. I want there to be like 300 people.
Yeah.
You know, that kind of energy, I feel that's where I want to be.
I've spent a lot of the last year looking at live videos from punk shows and hardcore shows that either I was at or wanted to be at. And I'm looking forward to wanting to be packed into a sweaty, you know, those are the rooms where you, like, you go in winter. So you know, I remember going to see Converge last, I don't know, who knows when, but it was at an Elks Lodge in Cambridge. It was cold out, so I wore a coat, rode my bike, and got there. It was just immediately hot as soon as I got into the room. It was hot and sweaty and terrible, and it was one of the best nights of that year.
So I'm never coat checked in my entire life up until 2019, and it was like I was just like, dude, I the worst part about winter shows is you come bundled and then you're sweating your ass off. And they're like, dude, coat check. And I'm like, oh, really? I'm going to coat check? Like, I'm going to coat check? And they're like, yeah, you idiot. Coat check. It's like $5 and it's the greatest thing. It's like it's the best $5 you've ever spent at a winter show in New England. And I was just like, all right, whatever, I'll do it. You know?
Yeah, seriously, and, you wear like sweatpants and you take those off with shorts underneath at a winter show, stuff it in the jacket sleeve, coat check it all.
I like that. Because it's musty in there too, you know, because all the moisture off of people's body from outside, they're bringing that in before they even warm up. But yeah, no, coat check a winter show. I will do that every single time now. Like, treat yourself. If you don't coat check winter shows, you're missing out on the whole experience.
That's another spicy take. Coat check. That's
dark mild cells.
Coat check dark mild.
Coat check dark mild. That's it.
I don't think we can top that. I think that's where we wrap this up, right? I mean,
we're not gonna get any spicier takes than that. I mean, I will tell you that the Elks Lodge in Cambridge doesn't have a coat check. I don't even know who was working.
I mean,
there. It's just a room.
Yeah. That's true.
Well, thanks for hanging out with us and telling us about what's going on with you. I really look forward to seeing you again and drinking a beer with you. Not that I wouldn't feel like that normally, but definitely the lack of Shane in person over the last however long it's been, it's been hard to deal with. And so it's been nice to see your face and hear your voice.
Yeah. No, I was when you texted me that you wanted to shoot me a call to ask me about doing this, the second I saw your text, I was like, fuck yeah, Joe. Like, that's awesome. And then getting to talk to you has been super awesome, man. Miss you bunches.
Miss you too, buddy. We're excited to hear more from the dregs. We'll maybe even hit you up about putting music here at this point in the podcast, or maybe we won't because we don't know how to do that. But if we can,
all right,
this is where we go.
All right, yeah.
But we will link to your we'll link to your playlist, and
also got a big cartel, hint hint, wink wink. Record labels live off of merch sales, by the way.
What do you got there around your beer, by the way? Another thing that we couldn't see was the koozie. Do you have a sexy koozie in your life?
Yeah, I got the Dregs Records koozies, thick, like the Lord intended them.
Look at that. That looks hard to squeeze in a good way.
Sipping and spinning, you know? And so, yeah, we got koozies. We got some stickers. I'm doing this really cool program that I'm calling Friends with Benefits, where anyone can submit me a logo design, and then I get them 100 stickers printed. And if those 100 stickers sell out in a month, I reprint them. Also, something cool about this is that the artist gets $1 per sticker sold. So no matter what, they walk out with $100, you know, because eventually all the stickers will get sold. But if the same design sells out within the month, I reprint it, they still make $1 sticker. So it's a really neat way for, you know, someone who's just getting into graphic design and stuff like that to kind of make up a logo where, you know, a logo is kind of easy versus like a t-shirt design or something like that, you know, just do the lettering. And it's like a kind of neat way to get put in front of people, because obviously I'll be promoting the sticker for sales. And then also it's a cool way for them to make some money, and possibly, depending, you know, the logo sells out a shit ton of times, they just keep making money off of the same design, you know, which is kind of a neat little thing too. So we got stickers, we got koozies, and we got the cassette for 2% Sonic by Drug Sauna on pre-order.
Nice, man. I'm looking forward to copying some of that and covering my laptop's microphone with some of your stickers.
Yeah, there you go. Make your life really complicated. Super fun.
Sounds like a plan.
Yeah, it's funny because who needs a microphone on your computer? Oh wait, COVID. Now everyone does.
I don't even know like where the microphone on my computer is to cover. So
and that's the thing is, so when I found out that I put a sticker over the microphone, I immediately go on to Apple's website to try to find the mic. They don't show it on diagrams, to the point where like all their images for all the computers, because they're digitally remastered, they actually blur out. So you can't even see where the mic is. So like, I literally have, cause I was going to like pinprick wherever the hell the mic was. I have no idea. I just got a giant Matt Pike for President sticker sitting on the center of my computer. And that is fucking up the mic to my computer.
Oh, well, blame Seth.
Yeah, no.
Much love, man. Thank you for talking to us. We appreciate you. I look forward to our next pint in person. Don't be a stranger. Let's listen to loud music. I want to know more about Stoner Doom, and Doom Stoner, and Sledge Doom. Show me the
ways.
Show me the ways.
Yeah. Well, thank you for letting me be on.
Good talking to you, Ben.
Thanks for listening. Tune in next time.